Hey guys, welcome back to the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow.
And I'm Katie Smith.
We have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to talk all things Tai Chang, heading back to the World Race Walking Team Championships. We're also going to review what a fantastic opening Diamond League there was in Doha. We're also going to touch on the new World Championship schedule, which was unveiled earlier last month. And we're going to be discussing all upcoming events in the month of May.
But first, and most excitingly, we are heading straight back to listen to double Olympic champion Dame Valerie Adams.
Woo! What was that? I'm excited! From Beijing, this was almost like your era of, it was pure domination. A championship wouldn't be a championship, because it always felt as though the women's shot put was always towards the start of the competition, and it was just, oh yeah, this is a normal championship because Valerie's won gold again, and this is just what happens. And I guess during that time period, you were just winning golds every year, you were being so consistent.
Yeah.
Did you feel a pressure at this point?
Yes, very much so. And, you know, and then the winning streak start coming along.
Yeah.
You know, 56 competitions unbeaten. And then I get beaten and then, you know, start all over again, 48, 49. And like the 49th competition I'd won, and then counting the 50th. That was a really intense competition because it's like, you know, don't get beat on when you can't be beat at your 50th competition, because that's just not cool. So the pressure of always going to competitions after that was, you know, so much pressure because people just assumed I'd won. And then I tell you a funny story was that at the World Cup in Marrakesh, I'd gone, and this was in 2014, and that was the last competition of the season, and my elbow had been playing up for a little bit, like quite a big bit, I must admit. And I ended up having to try and go get a local in my elbow because it was not very good. Anyway, I didn't end up throwing. I went out to warm up and I actually pulled out of the competition, first time ever. So, you know, so many people were like, oh my gosh, you know, Valerie Adams pulled out of competition in the competition, but I just walked off. Back at the hotel, people started congratulating me, and I was like. So this is after I've just bought my eyeballs out and I, you know, try to make myself look decent to come down to have some dinner. People congratulating me, and I said, oh, what for? And they said, oh, didn't you win the shot put? And that's when I realised that people just assumed, you know, that I would just win it all. And they don't even watch the competition. They just, you know, already assume that I've won it. And that's pretty tough, you know, because the expectation is already there and the competition had already started.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
I guess there was a combination of the ultimate compliment, but also like you just got the weight of everybody in the world, their expectation of you to continue your dominance of the event. I mean, you were, you got gold in Berlin. That was your second world title. Then you got another Commonwealth gold medal in 2010, and then 2011 you got your third world title. And then obviously you returned to London to try and defend your Olympic title.
Yes, and that was a low and a high. Like, that was a high and then a massive low and then a high, then a low again. And it was just like, I was in the best shape of my life in London, like physically, mentally, emotionally. I was like popping. I was dominating that year. And so was the Belarusian, you know, we know why she was dominating now, but anyways, I was popping that year, and you know, we had thrown massive throws, and 2 weeks before London, I did something to my back at training quite badly that I had to like be bed bound for like 3 days, and it was quite intense. But I managed to bounce back pretty quickly, like after a week, and you know, and luckily we were in Switzerland because, you know, London's just across the ditch, kind of. But I managed to bounce back and, you know, got myself into a really good headspace, and you know, physically I was doing really well. And I tell you, adrenaline is so amazing. Like, you just feel invincible when the pressure is on. And then we get to the village, and, you know, the day before we were supposed to compete, you know, the start was supposed to come out, and then my name wasn't on the list.
What?
I wasn't I wasn't entered into the competition.
Oh no.
So I, from experience, what I do is I always look at the start list to see what pool I am in, pool A or pool B, who's in my pool, what number throw I am. So then mentally, you know, you get yourself prepared for the qualification, right? And then you see what the qualifying mark is and you get yourself prepared. That's just the way athletes are. So I went on to have a look to see what pool I was in. And this was at about 10 p.m. and we had to go to training at midday because qualifying was the next morning at about 9 a.m. And I skimmed through the screen, didn't see my name. I skimmed through the screen again, didn't see my name. I refreshed the screen 3-4 times, didn't see my name. And then I panicked. And at this stage, I'd spent 2 years in Switzerland. I moved to Switzerland at this stage to, you know, continue training with Jean-Pierre and to, you know, give these Olympics a pretty good shot and a pretty good nudge. And what went through my head was, oh my God, I just spent 2 years of my life in Switzerland for nothing. So I brought this problem to the Federation's attention, and it was a human error, unfortunately. It was a human error. What happened was they saw it, instead of confirming our names that we were competing, which we're supposed to, the team manager signed it without ticking yes that I was competing. That was a blow. And I don't know, like, you know, people say, I guess some people would say, you know, well, this shouldn't be such a big deal. Well, actually it is. And most of the time that'll let you back into a competition if this happens. So I was very fortunate and very, very lucky that, you know, IAAF and whoever was working, I guess, the Federation or the rest of it, chased this problem up and were able to manage to squeeze me in. Because it was a human error, you know, it wasn't my fault or anything, but management. So I got into the competition. I was dead last in that pool B for the competition the next day. And I didn't train very well. And, you know, it was just, it just felt like a disaster. Like I felt like my whole plan is just falling apart right before my eyes. But I had no choice but to try to suck it up because whether we like it or not, the Olympic Games is happening tomorrow, and end of story. Like, that is just the way it is. So I went to training and tried to train as well as I could. It was pretty damn shit. And then I, you know, came back and got my crap ready for the next day, as you do, and, you know, got like 2 hours sleep that night and went out to compete. And then another saga they had when I turned up, because you're supposed to get your bib in the core room, they didn't actually print my name because my name wasn't on their list.
Right.
So, you know, I'm spending like 20 minutes and I'm supposed to be warming up, begging them to go and check my name out because my name was on the list and that I am part of this competition, and they're standing there telling me no, I'm not. So while everybody is, you know, warming up and getting ready for the qualification, I am sitting there literally begging for them to go and check the list out, to print my name out, please. And when we're about to go out, they come out with my little name on a bib. And, you know, all these things, like just all these obstacles, one after the other. So I had to, again, wipe my tears away because I was, you know, quite upset, because it's just like, why is this happening, and everything's just one after the other. So I just suck it up, put the bib on and wipe my face and just told myself, like, it's do or die, like, this is it. You have to, like, pull your head in. There is just no other way. This is it. We're walking out to qualify for the finals, and if you do not qualify, you won't be competing in the finals tonight. So we go out to qualifying, and first row, I threw like crap, and this is unlike me, because, you know, the qualification marker should be, I could do it with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
The second throw, I give it all I got, and I threw like this massive throw, the furthest throw I've ever thrown in qualification. But anyway, I qualify. And then, you know, from then on, I come back to the village and went back out to the finals, you know, as best prepared as possible. With the amount of stress I'd just been through, amount of rest and sleep I've just had, At the end, I actually threw further than I did in Beijing to win Beijing. I was paled. I'd lost, you know, a few kilos. I was just not myself at that competition. But you know what? I left my heart out there. I left fighting. And I, to be honest, I felt like I disappointed the nation. I felt like I disappointed coach. I felt like I disappointed my family who were there watching me, because I won a silver medal and not the gold medal. And only because I felt like I was in better shape than how I performed. And unfortunately, these things don't usually happen, but they did, and all of it happened to me basically one after the other. So justice was served 7 days later, and as I said, there was a, you know, hip hip hooray, then it was a really bad low, and then, you know, up again and then down again, and then, you know, icing on the cake was actually getting the call 7 days later that the winner had been done for drugs and I'd won the competition. So if I had let all these obstacles get me down or get in my way or just, you know, given up, there's no way I would have been able to give it, you know. I mean, it could have gone a different way, but because I kept fighting to the bitter end with every ounce of energy that I had, I was rewarded 7 days later with, you know, the Olympic gold medal and having come out on top after everything I'd been through. So, yeah, it was quite the championship, I can tell you that much.
Did you envisage that after the competition had finished, did you think there was any chance that you would be upgraded to gold?
To be honest, I didn't, because I had just had so much happen in the last 48 hours that my brain was just on the fact that I had disappointed the nation. That's what was on my mind, nothing else. And that was really, you know, isn't that sad that you've won a silver medal and you feel like you've disappointed a nation? And secondly, I felt like I'd disappointed a coach, you know, who had been in Switzerland 2 years, he'd given me his time and effort and all the rest of it, and I felt like I disappointed him. But one person that did know and did say something along those lines was actually my coach. And he said that someone asked him what he thought about Ostapchuk's performance, and he said, I have nothing to say, but you'll soon see, or you'll soon find out, or something along those lines. And he was right. 7 days later, he was right.
Yeah.
She was done. But to be honest, I had not enough energy for much else apart from trying to, you know, stand on my own 2 feet and deal with the media rush that was happening straight after the competition. As you can imagine, it was all, I guess, the disappointments, the, you know, despair, the heartaches, the disappointment in the public. But let me tell you, that all changed in 7 days.
Yeah. Was it weird still being in London at that point in time and then being walking away with the title?
Sorry, what was
sorry, the question? Was it strange, even though obviously you finished second in the competition, it was quite a quick turnaround because of the disqualification, for you to then be upgraded to gold, that the Olympics hadn't even finished at this point, it was still ongoing. What was there anything, like, what was going through your head after that had happened?
Well, so after the competitions, about a couple of days later, I actually went to Paris with my sister and my niece, and I took them to Disneyland. We were always going to do that. I was always going to take them there because they'd never been to Europe. And then when I got back to the village, I was actually heading back to Switzerland the day before the closing, because we had the Lausanne Diamond League not long after that, you know. So right. I had to get back to training, and coach had already gone. So I flew back, and let's just say it was the most saddest train ride back to base. And then the very next day, I had to, you know, drive to my coach's house to get to organize training for that day and for the next few days for Lausanne. And it was actually on my way to my coach's house that I get a phone call from a London number. So I pulled the car over and answered it, you know. But I was still really sad. Like, I was like, hello, you know, just real sad. I'm still trying to, you know, grieve about what happened. But yeah. Anywho, I pulled over and answered the phone call, and it was actually Chef de Mission, and he said, are you sitting down? I said, yeah, what's happened? And he said, you've just won gold medal. Ostapchuk has been done for drugs, and you are now the Olympic champion. You are now the defending Olympic champion. And I just bursted into tears. I lost the plot. Like, all the emotions just came out uncontrollably. And it was, like, it was happy, but it was sad, because I was alone. Like, I was by myself in this car in the middle of Switzerland. And I just started crying. And, you know, he kind of said, congratulations, you know, we will be in touch with your people about, you know, information going forward, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of had to sit there for like 5-10 minutes to get compose myself together. And then I drove to my coach's house, which was about, I don't know, half an hour away. And while I was driving there, I was thinking, I like, you get those shakes, you know, shaking and like disbelief and, oh my gosh, is this really happening? And all the rest of it. So I walk into the, knock on his door. He opens the door and I just like break down crying and told him that we've won. And it was an amazing moment that we shared, that we should have shared in the stadium. We shared it at his house. And, you know, he gave me a big hug and told me, I told you so. So that was amazing. And then, of course, when the news spread, you know, it would just like spread like wildfire. And all of a sudden I had New Zealand media in Switzerland. And it was incredible. It was the most incredible, bizarre situation that we had faced. But as I said, ups and downs and ups and downs and back up again. So it worked out well at the end, but I don't think any, you know, every athlete could have handled it the way I did.
No, definitely, certainly not. Especially when, you know, you had in the back of your mind, like the level playing field thing, are you competing on a level playing field and having to deal with that yourself and then to be later upgraded, it takes a huge amount of professionalism.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not easy, but I always say I'm one of the lucky ones because it happened 7 days later. Others not so lucky, it's eight years later.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the medal ceremony happening here in town, I was able to share this moment with the rest of New Zealand. Something in it's an experience that will probably never, ever happen in my lifetime ever again. But it was it was very unique, and I was able to share that moment with the rest of New Zealand, and that was quite special. That was really, really special. Although it doesn't take away from, you know, it's not the same as getting it, you know, in the moment, in the stadium with, you know, with the crowd, and that's just an amazing different feeling where now the moment was recreated, and I really appreciated my country for doing that for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's really special, and I guess if there's anything that could make up for it is being presented in front of a home crowd and that kind of thing. So I guess you got your reward in the end.
Yeah. Yep, I sure did.
So I guess after London, which, well, was pretty dramatic, I guess, you return... I guess return back to training, back to normality, and then recoup, get ready for 2013, where you take gold again in Moscow, which is, is this your fourth world title at this point?
Yes.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And then after that point, you kind of, I think, did you go to Glasgow as well for the Commonwealth Games?
I sure did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. And again, more success, and you know, you carried on basically business as usual. And then, however, more recently, you progressed through to Rio again, and this time you got a silver medal. But I guess it was a different feeling in terms of what you'd accomplished this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2015, I had to pull the pin on my season because I had a flicking nerve on my ulnar nerve, and they had to do a massive operation. Since 2013, 2014, 2015, I'd had six operations within that time frame, and that was quite a lot, but I didn't realize this elbow one was going to be as bad as what it turned out to be. So I actually had to pull the pin in 2015, and the comeback was going to be pretty hard with the old elbow, because at the end of the day, I mean, that's what basically finishes the throw off. And I knew going into Rio that it was going to be a tough competition, but, you know, I was willing to give it my best shot and work my way up to where I needed to. And I actually threw the furthest throw I'd done in 2 years in the competition in Rio. So it was quite a interesting competition, but I was, you know, at the end of it, I was happy for Michelle because she had thrown a massive PB on the last throw, and it only takes one throw, and she did really well to you know, scrape the gold medal away from me. But that's sport for you. But I really enjoyed those championships. I really did, and I think that was my fourth Olympics. Yes, my fourth Olympic Games. So that was my fourth Olympic Games. Picking up my third Olympic medal was pretty awesome to be there with the rest of Team New Zealand. But it was an interesting competition because coming back from an injury, you just never are quite sure.
Yeah.
And I had to do everything I could, but I knew everybody else was fighting tooth and nail to be the best they can be at the Olympic Games, because as we all know, it only comes around every 4 years. So I took the number two spot in Rio and enjoyed the moments of receiving my medal and be able to come out the other end with my elbow, which I thought was going to be a career-ending injury for me. So it was good but very tough, but good at the end of the day, because I could have been at home, you know, in a worse off situation than I was in Rio. So it was good.
Yeah, I mean, after Rio 2016, 2017 was a very different year for you in terms of what you've been doing for the last, I don't know, 20 years.
Yes, very, very different. I was growing a shot put in my stomach. I've always, I got married in 2016, and I've always said from a very long time that after Rio, I would like to have a child and start a family. I'm not getting any younger and all that hoo-ha. And my husband, was totally on the same page as I was. And when we came back from Rio, we kind of started that process, but we ran into a few complications along the way. And we ended up having our little girl through IVF, and it was a true blessing that we were able to do that. And so 2017 was basically like I continue to train right throughout the whole pregnancy as much as I can, I guess, but still being very, very careful with my state, because I don't know what pregnant woman can and can't do and all the rest of it. And some of the stuff I was doing, a lot of people kind of questioned and raised their eyebrows, but I, reminded them that lifting weights is part of my career and my job, and I wanted to keep my hand in it. But I really, really enjoyed 2017, being pregnant, then having our little girl, and enjoying that, and taking off the athlete hat and putting on the motherhood hat, was an amazing emotional roller coaster, because nothing in this life really prepares you for that. So we were blessed on the 10th of October with a little girl, Gimwana. She was healthy and beautiful. So yeah, aww, that was my 2017.
That's so lovely. I mean, after that as well, you gave birth in October, and
yeah,
just over 6 months later, or you were back competing at the Commonwealth Games literally last week, where you got a medal again, which is insanity.
Well, I actually ended up having baby through the sunroof, because her head was in a very compromising position. So obviously, when you have a C-section, that's another whole lot of recovery time and time period, with that. But one thing I did always say before, while I was pregnant, is that, if I could, I want to try and give the Commonwealth Games a good nudge. And to be honest, when I got pregnant a little bit later than I thought I would, I was like, I'm not quite sure about this. But I then had baby, and I said, let's just see how it goes. And I had baby, and oh my gosh, it was like someone punched me in the face the first few nights. It's like, I'm not sleeping, and baby's crying all the time. Like, what's going on? This is impossible. But once we kind of got home and got the swing of things, and after about, I think, 2 weeks, I went outside and just did some little body weight squats and, real, I guess, I don't want to say old people stuff, but, real light stuff,
yeah,
compared to what I would normally get into. And just kind of moved around, did that on the on on the daily, I had a female, what, woman's health physio come and see me at the house about, you know, making sure my abs were, you know, connecting back to where they needed to and all the rest of it, but more for my well-being. But little did anybody know that I was outside, you know, doing a bit more than I was supposed to, but that's just me. And so I kind of did that for about 6 weeks, making sure that my, you know, scars and stuff were healing and all the rest of it. And then in December, I said, I'll go back to the gym and just see, you know, how it all kind of goes. So I started back in the gym in December, but we're talking about very, very light stuff, like doing body weight squats a little bit deeper than what I was doing here, and doing little abs, because your abs don't really contract as well, but also quite a little bit more painful because of the operation, all the rest of it. But I was making good progress. Like every week I was progressing, you know, and getting better and better and better. And by January I was thinking, okay, so we actually need to start throwing to see where we are, but still a bit unsure, you know. We were taking on this challenge with an uncertainty, a feeling of where we're going to be come April. And let's just say we went on a training camp at the start of January, and it was like, okay, like it was fun. We kind of ramped things up pretty quickly while we were away at the Gold Coast for that camp. And then we came back and, you know, kept going. I thought, okay, we actually need to go away again, because I'm not used to staying home while trying to build up for an event. But then I'm also not used to trying to build up with an event with baby, with a child who was very dependent on you, who's not giving you enough time to sleep, and all this hoo-ha. But nevertheless, Valerie takes on the challenge with, you know, front on and facing forward, and with the help of my mother-in-law, who was able to look after baby during the day, and it enabled me to go to training and be able to do that whilst still trying to breastfeed. So all of these different dynamics kind of like came into play, you know, going to feed, going to training, make sure I'm back by a certain time to feed, and then going back to training, and then coming back to feed, and then expressing, and all this whole new world that I was getting myself into, you know, and feeling like my life has been sucked out of me, which pretty much it was. But anywho, I knew this was that it was the best thing for my child at the time, and that's what I needed to do, and I did that. And to be honest, I was able to survive the last 6 months with the help of my mother-in-law, you know, kind of helping me out with baby, also a great support team who were able to be there. But my coach has been also very open the fact that I'm a person who is never ever late, and all of a sudden I'm bringing him up going, listen, I'm going to be 15 minutes late, baby woke up late, or oh my gosh, she's just exploded in her nappy, or all these different excuses that I'm just letting him know, like, this is what's happening at the moment. I'm really sorry that I've got to be half an hour late, but that's just the way it is. And he was really sweet about it. But come about 6 weeks out from the Commonwealth Games, like, I kind of had my first competition. And to be honest, like, if there was one thing I wish I had more comps, but someone asked me, you know, if there was one thing that you could have had, would it be time? And I said, why? I told them, we don't have time. There's no point in wishing for something you can't have, and time is just not going to be is not it. So I had to give everything I've got. And every time I went to training, it was like I had to train to my limits as much as I can, as hard as I can today, and the same thing tomorrow. And we squashed so much stuff in the last 6 months, but more so in the last, say, 8 weeks than I've ever done in my whole career, because I knew I was, you know, fighting against time.
And the concluding chapter of Valerie Adams is coming later on in the show.
Okay, so let's talk race walking. The IAAF World Team Race Walking Championship last weekend, and it was a fantastic championship. Katie?
It was brilliant, except for the weather. As continuing on, Ben, with our classic crazy weather. I mean, it wasn't crazy, it was just damp and...
Yeah,
just,
I mean, it was a bit different to Doha, I have to say.
Oh, what a struggle it must have been for you there. Let's not even go there. But brilliant championships. And of course, we've got to start off with a very exciting record being broken.
And here she comes. And she's going to do it in style. And she's going to do it as well as a record holder. Winner. Women's 50 kilometres at the World Race Walking Team Championships, and new world record holder, Lang Ray.
I'm so proud of the way I was able to bring it home and really show a strong finish and almost get that second place in the end.
World silver medalist last year. What a World Race Walking Team Championships gold medalist in Taisang. It's a Japanese 1-2 as Katsuki takes the silver. The Japanese flag is out in Maroi, who was there as well. And the three Japanese walkers congratulate each other. She did it in Rome. She's done it here in China. Gold again for the Mexican girl, Maria Guadalupe Gonzalez. She wins the 20 kilometres race walk for women.
The women's 50 kilometres, where China's Lang Ray broke the world record, which was previously held by Portugal's Inês Henriques, who was start. She was previous favourite. I think everyone thought she was going to take it. And then Lang Ray came from nowhere. 4:04.36 she clocked. She's now, Ben, talking about going under 4 hours for the 50K, which I think is really exciting. And it was a China 1-2 in that race as well. So Yin Hang got the silver. And it was Australia's Claire Tallant that took the bronze.
I think it was really nice to see the home crowd do so well. I think always with these events, when you're hosting a major championship, there needs to be interest for the home nation to really get behind it. And it was nice to see the likes of Lang Ray really go out there and do a demonstration of race walking. And to be talking and breaking sub 4 hours is crazy.
Yeah, like, and really exciting. Great to see that it's the female athletes at this meet that are really kind of pushing those boundaries. But talking about hosting, I think what is really exciting is seeing the Japanese talent out on show there
at the weekend.
Because they are, of course, hosting the Olympics in 2 years' time in Tokyo. And let's just go to the men's 50 kilometres then. It was Japanese 1-2-3. Stole all the places on the podium. They, of course, took the team gold as well. The winner in the individual, Haruki Arai, 3:44.25. He went 4 minutes off his PB, but he didn't need it because he was just ruthlessly racing that day. He knew exactly what he needed to do. Looked brilliant along the way. In second, it was Hayato Katsuki, and third, Satoshi Maruo. I'm very sorry if my pronunciation is a little bit off, but brilliant, brilliant racing from all of them. Then women's 20K, so potentially, should we call it the sprint of race walking?
I mean, you could call it that.
Maybe a little bit extreme. But that was won by Mexico's Maria Guadalupe Gonzalez.
She was the favourite going in.
She was the favourite. She was the defending champion.
Yeah.
And pretty cool as well. First woman in this championships to ever defend their title.
Oh, really?
Across any event. So that's a pretty cool little stat for her there, going into Tokyo as well. And then the men's 20-kilometre race, which again was triumphant for Japan. It was Koki Ikeda who got the first place individually in that one. Only 20 years old, so technically could have all... And he only turned 20 a couple of days before the race, so could have been running in the under-20s event that was going on there, but didn't, and still beat the big guys in that.
It's really depressing as well, because I've only recently just turned 22, and there's literally people 2 years younger than me winning world titles in race walking.
Making you feel like you're underachieving.
I guess so.
What are you doing with your life, Ben?
I don't know.
No, I don't either. but another fun fact for you there was Ikeda is the first Japanese winner over 20 kilometres ever in the Team World Race Walking Championship. So
cool.
Pretty cool for him. And he won it in the final turn of the race as well. He just sped away right at the end. So very good tactical racing from him. But a brilliant weekend, as we said. And I think a really exciting way to put race walking on the athletics calendar. And someone who is very interested in this is a British race walker, Tom Bosworth, who you spoke to a little while ago.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough recently to actually catch up with Tom before he headed out to Australia and to Taichung, where he ended up finishing 14th. And we're going to join him now as he talks about his experiences at the Rio Olympic Games.
It was just all coming together. I went into Brazil, holding camp. Everything was just going perfectly. And then come race day, I had an awful stomach the night before. Absolute awful stomach. And I thought, oh, why is this happening? All this preparation. And I couldn't go to the loo before the race. And this was really playing on my head. And I stood on the start line saying, I've messed it all up. I've ruined it. I'm going to feel crap. I'm going to drop out at 5K. This is going to be a disaster. And then I ended up leading the race for 16 kilometres and holding on till sixth place. And people are like, oh, you didn't win a medal, or you're so close. Not at all. Like, I was ranked 27th or something. I finished sixth, like top eight. It's a finalist. That's the equivalent of Olympic finalists. British record again that day. Oh, I was just over the moon.
I mean, you say, like, on the start line, you thought you were going to drop out at 5K. At what point were you like, no, actually, I've got this, I can do this here? What was the turning point for you in the race?
So I just was like, I'm not going stupidly fast, and I'm leading by like 50 metres. What's going on here? And I just was churning out the kilometres, just over 4 minute Ks, ticking them off lap by lap. And I was like, just keep doing this, you know.
Yeah.
10K pass. And I was like, this is really strong, this is great. I was like, right, it's going to start hurting soon, you know, the next few K. If I get through them, then we're nearly there. I remember K12 and 13 really starting to hurt. And about K14, I remember thinking, right, they're going to start upping the speed here. So, and they did. There was about, I don't know, 10 in the chase pack. And so what I did about K14 or 15 is I dropped back into that pack on purpose. I was like, right, let's go use them. Don't try and stay out there. What I wish I'd done was stay out there and go for it.
Really?
Yeah. And because all I was doing all the way through those Ks being like, instead of thinking, right, they're going to catch me, I was thinking, now it's time to go and win this race.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
being so, like, I just didn't expect to be leading the Olympic Games.
I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of situation you can put yourself in mentally to know what kind of gamble to play there, really. And, I mean, as you said, you came in ranked 27th, and coming out 6th really is not that bad. I mean, what were your feelings when you crossed that line?
I was just overwhelmed completely. And it's a shame because there was no BBC or nobody was down there from Britain, no media whatsoever. Like, so I walked through the mix zone, did a few interviews in there, and I was like, oh, this has been the performance of my life. But, you know, no one knew of me really, no one knew of race walking, or no one really cared that much, especially from Britain. People just started to take notice in that year. And so that was a bit like, I mean, nothing was going to take away from that. My fiance was there, my family were there, you know, it was brilliant. But that in my head then, I was like, well, I don't want any other walker to ever ever kind of felt forgotten at Olympic Games when they go and finish top eight or whatever, or win a medal. Like, I never, ever want that to happen. And for me, it was just about, I just wanted to see my family, go and celebrate, party, and that day is still my favourite day ever. But it really made me want to be like, right, athletics is equal for everyone, let's stop, you know, I want to put...
That's not favourite.
Yeah, but we were out in the middle of nowhere, which was difficult to get to. The course was brilliant, mine, I loved the course, but that meant, you know, the media didn't all travel. A lot did, but the British didn't. And so, you know...
It's frustrating.
You come on a year later and we've got events at the Diamond Leagues, we've got events here, you know, the 20K on other world champs was on the TV, and, you know, I'm really proud of that.
I mean, like, people weren't really taking much notice of race walking, but you're making them watch now. Like, we've got race walking happening right in the middle of Diamond Leagues.
Yeah.
World Indoor Tour events, like, it's, you've... I'd like to say, especially in Britain, you're behind that. Like, you put race walking on the map, which is incredible. I mean, you said as you crossed the line in Rio, it was the best day. I mean, obviously, annoying that the British media didn't turn up, but you said that you wanted to party with your friends and your family.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Was that the same day? I don't know. You said fiance.
It wasn't fiance at that point.
No.
Yeah.
So what happened with that? Tell me about that.
Oh god, that was a right pain. So a few days later, we went up with Christ Redeemer. I was going to propose, and I knew I was going to propose in Rio for months.
Yeah.
I had arranged with one of the jewelers in Heathrow to have the right ring stocked at the time, the right size. You know, every time I travelled in and out of Heathrow all year, I'd been in there and I was looking at rings, and I knew it had a spear, had to be a certain type, it had to be a certain make and all this. So we flew down from Fontainebleau, Heathrow, I bought the ring, jumped on a plane, got out there, asked Team GB to put it in their safe because all the rooms were, you know, it was a bit dodgy in the Olympic Village and stuff. So...
Did he have any idea? Sorry, we'll say his name. What?
Harry, Harry, he didn't... he knew we discussed about getting married and that sort of thing and getting engaged, and, yeah. and I wanted to have something from the Olympics that we both could share as well, because
yeah.
I knew this was going to be such a special few days. Obviously the race went far better, and I said to him, "Well, I'm not going to do it at the race because I don't want the attention coming off me." A few days later, again, I tried to do it up Christ Redeemer, but it was so packed with people. If I got down on one knee, I'd have just got knocked over. I said it was awfully windy day, but I said, "Oh, Harry, come on! I haven't had the chance. I want to go for a walk on Copacabana Beach." We had a couple of mates with us. They knew what I was going to do, and I said, "Oh, let's have a picture here." So I gave my phone to him and I said, "Look, when you go to take a picture, I'll get down on one knee." And hence we got that iconic picture.
Viral on Twitter. I remember the time. It was amazing photo.
Friends texting me saying, "You're on Lorraine, you're on This Morning," and all this. And friends in America saying, "Oh, you're on our news in America." And I'm like, crikey, I'm getting more attention for this proposal than breaking the British record and finished sixth at the Olympic Games. But it was just a great week. It really was the best week of my life.
That was just really interesting there, the point he made about race walking being a sport that is part of athletics, making sure that it's a joint event. And I think what's really great about Taichung was that it just gives that event a platform that it needs to just make people realise whilst the Diamond League is going on, there is still another aspect to athletics that is really exciting to get involved with. As he mentions, there's so many rules and differences to normal athletics. I think it's something fans can really get excited about.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy, and he has a lot to say on the sport of race walking. Really top guy. Another guy who has also a lot to say about the sport of race walking is Iñaki Gomez. Now, we chatted to him briefly in last week's episode, but Iñaki is the chair of the Athletes Commission, and he spoke all about that. So you can listen to our last episode if you want to hear more from him there. But this week, we wanted to focus more on race walking. I feel like race walking isn't a go-to sport for a youngster. How did you kind of get into athletics?
Really? I thought race walk was at the center of athletics. Well, no, I mean, I'm serious. In all seriousness, I got into the sport because I was born and raised in Mexico, and, you know, Mexico has such a tradition and history of successful race walking, and getting involved in athletics as a little kid, that was one of the events that you kind of taught how to do, and maybe I didn't pursue it at the time, but it was sort of instilled in me that the technique and the appreciation for the event. And it actually wasn't until I moved to Canada that I started actually doing the event. Just the fact that, I was Mexican and stereotyped, and all of a sudden I was doing this event at the high school level, and, before I know it, I'm, making junior national teams and pursuing it, and the rest is kind of history. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's a unique, different event, but I think people around the athletics community would understand how special it is and what a great place it has in the sport of athletics.
Okay, well, I thought whilst you're here and with Taichung around the corner, I wanted to talk about the IAAF World Racewalking Team Championships in Taichung, China. What do you think about the introduction of the 50K walk? Obviously, it came in at the Worlds last summer. What do you think about it being now included in the program in Taichung?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very well aware of the delicate situation that is going on with our sport and the need to revamp and trying to balance and create gender equity in the various events. So, I'm supportive of the event. I do think it needs a little bit of development because there is quite a gap from the leaders to, those who just make the standard. And I mean, hopefully over time and we get to see more women get involved and participate. And again, I don't think that they can't do it. They're very capable of it. And I mean, like I said, I've only done 150K and, I blew up. So Ines walked fairly close to my time. So like I said, I have full respect for her and her abilities. And I think there are so many women out there that are going to, sort of show the world what they're capable of. So this will be interesting to see how many women we can get under the, I would say 410 mark. And that starts showing the real growth at that event, and if the sport feels that this needs to be maintained and supported, then I'm all for it. So interesting times ahead for sure.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So that aside, we put a few questions. We put a question on social media to see, well, to ask listeners of the podcast if they had any questions for you. So the first question is, if in July the IAAF withdraw permission for Russian athletes to compete as neutrals, will you protect Russian clean athletes such as Lasitskini, Shabenkov, Sidorova, or will it just be another statement from the Athletes Commission that everything is fine, like before Rio?
I mean, it's a tough thing to comment on at this time. I think the important thing to remember is that, you know, Russia has yet to commit to meeting the requirements of the criteria that was posed by the IAAF task force. You know, that's the main point. Until we see, in my view, or the IAAF sees that there's reasonable, you know, progress to actually solve the solutions and the gaps and deficiencies that they have, you know, I'm frustrated. You know, I've been impacted by the sport in my competitions by dopers, and I want to see that changes are being made and that federation, you know, actually makes the changes necessary to get reinstated. Now, that's one side, and obviously I haven't addressed the question of the neutral athletes, but the neutral athletes at this time, the criteria that I, you know, as I understand it, has been set in place is on the basis that the Russian Federation is still a member federation, while suspended, but they're still a member federation. And so, you know, that's something that if in July the council feels and that the right process is to expel Russia, then, you know, I think it's at that time that we need to consider whether there's an alternative measure for athletes that are able to satisfy some kind of maybe more stringent criteria to prove that they are either A, clean, or consistent with the rules that we have for our sport. You know, I'm a big advocate of rules, and you know, where there is because of my profession, but rules are in there to protect the interest of the sport and the repute of the sport, but also the athletes. And you know, if there is the possibility that athletes' rights, you know, for example, the three athletes that are being challenged, or would face challenging times ahead, then, you know, that's for me and the council and the commission to work with the IAAF to see if there is an alternative solution for those specific athletes. But again, it's really hard to speak to this sort of without knowing the full facts. And until such time, I think it would be ill-advised for, you know, a commission like us to actually make a statement or advise as to whether we, you know, we support or disagree on something. Like anything, I will speak on behalf of the athletes. You know, if these Russian neutral athletes have an issue, we're here for them. They need to come to us and actually speak to us. You know, it's great that, you know, some advocate, you know, journalist is tweeting at me and asking this question, and I welcome the question. But, you know, those athletes that are being prejudiced, they should come to us, bring their issues forward, and how we can potentially have a solution for them. But you know, it's always on the balance of the fact that, you know, even many athletes around the world still see the neutral criteria as somewhat problematic, because again, there's still that uneasiness about Russia actually meeting the requirements to be dope free. And so it's going to be an ongoing discussion, it's going to be an ongoing challenge, and so we're hopeful that we can be there to advocate not only for these, you know, potentially prejudiced athletes, but also on behalf of the larger athletics community, because they're equally impacted by what's happening, whether the Russian Federation believes it or not. This uncertainty is not good for the sport. It's not good for the athletes that are ongoing and participating now. So, yeah, it's very interesting, challenging, but, you know, I think we have very good people at leadership right now, and I'm looking forward to actually working with them to find solutions.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I've got a potentially a potentially less heavy question for you now.
That's much welcome.
Okay. So, question is: who would be most successful in an event swap between you and Valerie Adams? So that would be you throwing the shot put and Valerie doing race walking.
I would have to say Valerie would win both. I mean, I'm sure just her height alone, her leg span, you know, each step is probably three of mine. So there alone, she's already winning.
So whilst there were race walkers out there being rained on in China, I wonder where you were, Ben.
You said that with a tinge of bitterness in your voice, Katie.
I wonder why.
I was lucky enough to be at the opening Diamond League of the season in Doha. And what a fantastic opening meet. I mean, I know it's an off year, but wow. It was so good. Were there any standouts for you?
Everything. Am I allowed to say that?
I mean, to be fair, I agree with you.
Well, let's... I think we've got to start with the men's javelin. Would you say that? I feel like there's probably about five...
domination, jeez.
There's five different things we could start with. But yes, German domination. The Deutschlanders are here.
Yeah.
And they have staked their claim at the beginning of the season. Now, a lot of us, obviously, expected Vetter and Roller to...
slog it out, yeah.
To slog it out, but, yeah. But Andreas Hoffmann, did we expect him to be over 90 metres in the first meet the season? Someone bring my voice down, because I can't handle it.
Katie, I'll get your brown paper bag. Yeah, they were all incredible. It's crazy that one country can have so much depth, but I think it follows on from... If you see your training partners or other people within your own nation succeeding, I guess you believe it's real and it kind of becomes infectious.
Well,
success.
And also, three of them in from one country, you've got questions of who's going to go to champs if there's only limited places, but also you want to be the best
in your country.
First in your country, yeah. I think, before you want to be in the world, right? So that's just going to add a whole new element of competition now. I'm so, so intrigued to see where this one's going to go. If you had to call it now, Diamond League winner of those three, we're not even including anyone else in the field. Who are you going to call?
I'm going to say Roller.
Ghostbusters? Sorry.
I'm going to say Roller. And the reason why is I think his loss at the Worlds last year really hurt him. Mm. Really hurt him. And he said in the press conference as well, he said something along the lines of, obviously referencing Vetter being like, he's had his chance to shine, but it's now time for me to step back up and show him how it's done. So... I don't know. Mm. It's exciting. I'm excited.
And we've already saw that inkling from him of... Vetter came out in the first round, 91-56 he threw. So Roller had to come from behind and throw bigger. And he did. And I think that's showing something. It's, as you say, that little bit extra hunger.
There's a fire.
He is not finished yet, is he? He felt last season was not completed for him in the way he wanted it.
Also, I got German lessons as well. It's not Sebastian Vetter. It's Vetter. Like feta cheese.
Yeah.
That's how you remember it.
Yeah, and Röhle. Röhle?
Okay. Röhle? We'll work on this.
In fact, if anyone's German who's listening, please turn off now, because we have butchered your language.
Away from the javelin, there was also other fantastic field events that went on. Men's high jump, home favourite, Mutaz, stepped up yet again, and he's so great. When he came out, he's just waving to all the crowd. And do you see his Instagram post a few days before the meet? And he was posing with all of his Diamond League trophies that he won before. He's like, can't wait to get another one.
I also am loving his new vow to take home the bar.
Oh, yeah. He literally picked it up again and ran off with it.
He's going to have a collection of the most random objects in his house.
Well, just high jump bars, really.
Yeah, but I mean, that's pretty random for most people, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, great competition from him once again. And I think, you know, pretty expected, actually. So in my head, he wasn't even this sort of standout performance, even though he hit 240 again, I think. 238, sorry.
I think it was just in the stadium. Everybody was so behind him, so you kind of got carried away within that. But... another fantastic field event that was happening was the men's triple jump. What a crazy competition.
So Pichardo, 17.95, he won it in the end. But Taylor, Christian Taylor, poor guy, not far behind, 17.81.
How can you come second in a Diamond League with 17.81?
But I love it. It's one of those competitions where I can't call it this early, but it could go either way. And they're just going to push themselves onto these exciting distances for the fans.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the season ahead. And also what I think is interesting is Christian Taylor is doing the 400 metres in Shanghai. Just to say as well quickly, guys, we unfortunately won't be covering the Shanghai Diamond League because we're recording just before that. But we'll talk about it all on the next week's episode.
It's our international dilemmas, isn't it? Being in the same country at the same time is actually quite difficult for us.
Yes, it really is. But we're managing just about.
So we will be talking about Shanghai.
And Eugene and... Maybe Rome? Not Rome.
Not Rome.
God sis, though.
But it's coming around quickly. Anyway, but yeah, looking forward to them just coming up across
the
season.
Yeah, seeing Taylor in the 400 metres is really exciting. And in the press conference for Doha, a guy comes up and asks the question saying, Christian, do you think instead of focusing on the 400 metres, if you just focus solely on the triple jump like you should be doing, would you not be breaking the world record by now? And then Christian just laughs. And I was like, ooh, is that a bit abrupt to just say that to an athlete? And then Christian says, yeah, guys, for those of you who don't know, that's my dad. And his dad got up in the middle of the press conference and asked the question. But Christian kind of came back and said he spent a lot of years focusing solely on the triple jump. I think it's just nice to mix things up a little bit.
Do you remember when Ashton Eaton had basically won everything and was just the boss of the world?
Oh, yeah, he did the four hurdles, didn't he?
And was amazing. And I just thought Ashton Eaton was such a brilliant example of athletics. I think sometimes we do forget that you don't just have to be boxed into one event. A lot of long jumpers are brilliant sprinters. A lot of...
triple jumpers are good long jumpers.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think it's really exciting seeing athletes just stepping out of their traditional events and seeing what they can do and whether that can make them better at their own events coming back.
Another fantastic event was the women's pole vault. It was great to see Sandy Morris continue her indoor form, but I can't believe Stefanidi came fifth, I think, and she's ruined my fantasy Diamond League team.
Yes, so Sandy Morris, calling it now, she was my captain of my Diamond League team. That is how much faith I have in this athlete. I've just, ever since the World Indoors, where she got gold, when Stefanidi was supposed to come in and claim that, she's just looking supreme form. Love her as a person. If you don't follow her on social media, you absolutely should. And I just so think she's going to win the Diamond League this year. I think the way she jumps, the stamina she's got to just produce it over and over again, absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. On a separate note, though, did you see her tweet about the broken poles before the event?
Yeah, of Alicia Newman.
It was Alicia Newman. No. I mean, how awful is that?
Yeah, really. I just can't imagine how difficult it must be to travel with poles all around the world. So,
but then to jump... on pole, they were borrowed from the local stadium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To use in competition, incredible. She actually vaulted really, really well.
Yeah, no, she did really well. And I think a word on Stefanidi as well. She said after the competition that it was the first time she's jumped pain free this year, which could mean, I guess, she could be on the upward trajectory. I guess.
Oh, Ben, I totally expect this to be a hugely competitive season. I think Morris is going to edge it this time.
Also, another women's field event, which was insane. Discus Queen. That's her name on Instagram as well. Discus Queen, Sandra Perkovic. I love her.
71.38 she threw in the first round.
That is insane.
3 centimetres off her PB at the first event of the season.
And she was going mental in that cage. She was so happy.
Yeah.
There was a great gif, I think, the Diamond League put out of her just being, like, going crazy. So look on their Twitter, because it was incredible. To the track, what was your favourite track event?
Stephen Gardner, 400 metres.
What a guy.
Where did that come from?
He's a beast. His two...
No, I just mean sort of, it was very early on in the meet, and it just sort of, I think it kind of set the tone. I was just so shocked that had come out. I think it was...
He beat Mukwala as well.
43.87 he came. Mukwala only third as well. That was quite shocking, I thought.
I mean, Mukwala has been at Commonwealth, so maybe he's feeling... fatigued? I don't know. But
also, just a word on Gardner, he's also broken the Bahamian 200-metre record in the last couple of weeks. 1975 he ran for that, and then broke the national record in Doha.
So fast.
Great season coming up for him.
He's really, really exciting. Really exciting. And then, along with that, a stellar men's 200 metres, also one of my highlights.
Mm.
That field was stacked.
like world champion Ramil Guliev, Nathaniel Mitchell-Bake, Andre de Grasse, Noah Lyles. Well,
don't know if anyone saw, but Ben put out a tweet before that race.
Oh yeah,
a poll asking people to vote.
I put a poll out, foolishly forgetting the brilliant Noah Lyles. I said Guliev, Mitchell-Blake, de Grasse, and who's the
McLeod
fourth one?
Before he withdrew, was it?
Oh, no, it wasn't McLeod. It was with Jareem Richards, another really incredible guy. Had a great time at the Commonwealth as well. I just can't wait. The men's 200 metres this season is unreal, and I'm just so excited for the rest of the Diamond Leagues.
And probably too soon to say, and the kind of question that everyone asks whenever anyone runs something remotely fast, is Lyles going to be the new Usain Bolt?
We don't know. I have to wait and see, I guess. I was gutted that Omar McLeod did pull out. It would have been really cool to see him in the men's 200, but he will be in the 110 hurdles in Shanghai against Aries Merritt. So that'd be a great face-off.
One final track star I want to mention who I thought was outstanding in the women's 100 metres. Talu.
Oh, yeah.
10.85.
Again, that was another stacked field. Like, really, really high quality.
And I think everyone keeps forgetting these Ivory Coast athletes. It was, again, pipped as Thompson against Shippers. And then she comes out of nowhere. Blessing Okabare also in second place. Grace.
I was annoyed though because for my fantasy team again, and I picked the wrong woman from the Ivory Coast. I thought Ahore. She had such a good indoor season. I just thought that she'd continue, but so did Talu. So hey, at least one of them. I guess I should get half points maybe.
Debatable, but it was also nice. Just on a side note, see Thompson looking a little bit like her normal form again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
exciting season ahead.
And also honourable mention for Kendra Harrison. And it was cool to see Brianna McNeil coming back and pushing her pretty close.
Oh, very close. I mean, I think Harrison only really got it in the final two hurdles. She sort of overhauled. She says she can run sub 12:20.
Ooh, wow.
It's her own world record.
I thought you were going to say sub 12 then.
I couldn't get my words out. 12. I was just trying to be dramatic, that's all.
It works.
I would pay to see that. I would just love to see her do that. And if she's got McNeil nipping at her heels, we've not seen the best of Sharika Nelvis in the outdoor season yet.
Christina Manning. The American women's hurdles is the same for like German men javelin. Yes, like, it's just craziness all around. Speaking of Doha, the World Championship schedule came out, and there is some really, this is for Doha 2019, by the way, just to clarify. Then there's some really interesting points in there. There will be the first time there's ever been a mixed 4x400 meter race in it, in any kind of world champs that we've ever done. There was one, it debuted at the World Relays in 2017, where Stephen Gardner and Shawnee Miller-Weber, what a team, teamed up with some of the other Bahamians, and they won in front of a home crowd, which is incredible to see.
And it was a hugely popular event. I think people have been wanting to see this kind of thing for a while.
And it gives countries with less depth, like the Bahamas, they've got way less people, but they've got some phenomenal athletes in the men's and women's, and it gives them a chance to kind of come together. And what an incredible team that is going to be. And I think it's nice that it finishes, it's the last event on the last day, complete parity amongst men and women. Nobody's more special than the other. It's men and women finishing together, and men racing women racing men.
It's going to be absolute carnage. But brilliant at the same time.
Yeah.
And as you said, completely unpredictable. I don't think you'll be able to tell who's going to... Because the Americans, probably on paper, have the fastest, but have they got...
Alison Felix trying to run down Stephen Gardner.
Oh,
like, this is,
it's too much.
So excited. And then there's some other like really interesting points, stuff that hasn't been done before. The Midnight Marathon, there's going to be such a spectacle around the Qatar skyline. It's insane. I can't describe how it looks. It's just going to look really, really cool. And then there's also other important bits that are on the timetable is that all the multi-eventers will actually finish on the same day, on the same session. So that's just going to be a big old multi-event love affair.
Yeah.
Super exciting. Super exciting. Outside of Doha and that kind of thing, there's been some brilliant results across the world, especially from juniors. So we've got Tampere on the horizon for the World Under 20 Championships, and there's been some brilliant results.
And one of your absolute favourites,
Mondo Duplantis.
Yeah, I mean, there's two. So let's start with Duplantis then.
Yeah,
in Mondo, the pole vault.
He's what a guy. I love it. He's great. I love his attitude. And he ran an incredibly fast 100 metres. Did you see that?
I didn't.
He ran like 10.5, I think.
Wow.
For the 100 metres as well. He's a high schooler. Look.
Yeah. That's great. But yeah, just to explain the context then. So it was at his high school
meeting. It was a high school meeting. And from what I've been told, he did a world record, 5.93. Incredible.
Junior.
World on its winter record, getting excited. But unfortunately, I'm not sure if it's going to be ratified because there was no drug testers at the event. So I think it might have to stick at 5.88, but he'll just have to do it again.
But I couldn't imagine at my school seeing someone breaking world records at a school athletics meet.
Can you imagine?
It's so great. And he was so proudly wore his school vest as well.
Yeah,
I just love that. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
On to favourite athlete number two. I think everyone's favourite athlete right now.
What a woman. I mean, Sydney McLaughlin. She is a different beast altogether. 100 metres. She ran a windy 11.07. 200 metres. She ran 22.39. 400 metres. She's the world leader in the women's 400 metres. 50.0 something, I think. And then her actual event, the 400 metre hurdles, she broke the world under 20 record, and that was her opener for the season.
I feel like she wakes up and goes, what do I fancy today breaking the world record in?
Yeah, I'm not sure what event she couldn't. She could probably do the 800, she could probably do a good long jump, good 100 hurdles, maybe heptathlon.
Said this already?
We're going to try and track her down in Tampere, and we're going to ask her.
We're going to speak to her about this, but also you should follow her social media because she's absolutely fantastic on Twitter.
Yeah, she's hysterical, and on Instagram as well. Really good fun. Aside from that, looking at the month ahead, we have loads going on. We've obviously got Shanghai, which has already happened, and we're hoping it was a fantastic meet. I'm sure it was. But there's also Eugene, there's Rome coming up, and then there's also Got this,
this sort of strange little meet that comes in the middle, but it's so, so important to our multi-eventers, mm-hmm. leading into the Europeans, which obviously for multi-eventing, heptathlon in particular this year is going to be stellar.
I am so excited. And I've been told, apparently, Caroline Schaefer is like in the form of her life in training and is going to try and give Tiam a run for her money. 7,000 points. Tiam Schaefer and Anouk Vetter are all signed up for GOTSIS, and I am so excited for that showdown. Yeah, it's going to be incredible.
Who are we thinking then? Do you know what? My money is still on Tiam.
I think, obviously, the smart money is on Tiam, but if we're going on odds, and if I was a betting man, I'd go Schaefer. Just because you get a great return, and I don't feel like many people know how good of an athlete she actually is and what she's going to do. And don't forget that Berlin, she'll be at home. It'll be a home champs for her.
That's very true.
And she'll put up a good fight for Nafi amongst loads of other brilliant female heptathletes. There'll be Anouk Vetter there.
Katarina Johnson-Thompson. Ivona
Dadic as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many of them. And so exciting. So exciting for all these bringing events ahead. And then I think also on the men's side, Damien Warner has confirmed as well for GOTSIS. These full start lists haven't been released just yet, but I'm sure probably by the time you're listening to this, I'm sure they'll be out.
Part of the fun is just getting excited over who could be there, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We hope to see you all there.
What? Where did that come from? Are we going to be there? Are we going to see? Okay,
we'll just leave it there.
Another thing as well I wanted to touch on, just to remind you all, but we are doing the... not laugh whilst I'm trying to speak, please. We are running the IAAF Fan of the Month on the podcast, and basically all you have to do is to become Fan of the Month is you leave a review. Doesn't have to be nice, but we'd quite like it if it was. And then rate us as well. Rate us on iTunes and leave your Twitter or Instagram handle or whatever so we can contact you and be like, congrats, you're Fan of the Month, and we can give you a shout-out as well. And the Fan of the Month will get some IAAF goodies, so I can tell you're all really excited. Katie, you look really excited.
I'm already Fan of the Month, so I think I won it last month, didn't I?
I mean, you gave it to yourself, so...
I awarded myself. Well, now it can only be time for the final instalment of our epic interview with Dame Valerie Adams, double Olympic champion, shot putter from New Zealand. So here's how it ends.
It's like the Val Adams trilogy. This is the final instalment.
Oh, like the return of the...
Stop trying to make a Lord of the Rings Valerie Adams crossover
happen. It will. No, stop it. It's better than Return of the Jedi.
Right, here we
Whatever,
go.
Whatever, here she is.
Obviously, going into the Commonwealth Games, you were fighting against time. And I guess this year, more than ever, the standard of the championships was really quite high in the women's shot put.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, just your luck, really. I guess seeing you get a silver medal, it is an incredible achievement in such a short space of time, what you've done. And then I guess, you know, competing against Daniil, who, you know, is a great competitor, who just did well at the World Indoors. It must be quite nice to return to competition, but this time with your child, like, there, being able to enjoy it with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Danielle threw very well, and she should, you know, she's in shape. She just came back from World Indoor. She threw very well there. She got a silver medal. So, you know, she was ranked number one going into these championships, and she threw very, very well. I think I was ranked number four going into the Commonwealth Games, and you know, I knew there was, you know, other athletes in front of me, but I also knew I had experience and I'm quite a fighter. Like, I fight when I'm competing, regardless if I'm winning or not. I will fight to the end, like a little, not a little, but like a bulldog, you know, like I'm going for it. And it was just amazing to be able to have that opportunity to compete and actually know that the standard in the Commonwealth is going up, and that's a positive thing, because it means that, you know, we are doing very well, and whatever's happening within the Commonwealth is working, especially within the women's shot put. For a very long time, there was always me, and then there was a daylight between me and second place getter and third place getter. So it is good to see the standard go up, and it was great to be able to compete against all these young bucks. You know, you got to understand that most of these girls are a lot younger than I am. So I felt like a dinosaur. I mean, I was the oldest person in our athletics team. So it was actually quite good to be like camp mother and be able to compete against the youngsters who, A, probably some of them have never been there, but, you know, be one of the more experienced ones. And it was, as I said, it was an amazing moment, and so much emotions. I was overcome with emotions when they handed baby to me after the competition, because that was my gold medal right there. She was in my arms, and I was able to get up on the dais and receive my medal, then go home and share it, or go back to the apartments and actually share it with my family who are there. So that was quite special.
I remember seeing whilst it was being broadcast, you went over to your fellow competitor Cleopatra Burrell, and you said, "Oh, this is Auntie Cleo," kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there a lot? Sorry, I told you to interrupt. Is there a sisterhood within the shot put women?
Cleo's my best friend within the shot put circuit. She and I, that's her fifth Commonwealth game. She went to Manchester, Cleo, and I've known her for over 20 years through the sport, and we have developed an amazing relationship. I've been to Trinidad, she's been to New Zealand, and she is Auntie Cleo, and it's awesome to be able to have an opportunity to compete for your country and do all that, but also to know the person and create long life friends, which I have with Cleo. And that's just a special thing that, you know, we are able to do within our sport, because at the end of the day, we're competitors and want to win and, you know, beat each other and all the rest of it, but we're all humans and we all have feelings, and, you know, it's nice to be able to share personal things off the field, you know, and then get on the field and compete and do what you got to do on the field. So yeah, Auntie Cleo is in Trinidad, and she's amazing. She's been my good friend, my best friend on the circuit since 2002.
Wow, that's so nice. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Away from the track, obviously you've been busy with your baby and that kind of thing, but you've also gotten involved with the Athletes Commission.
Yes.
What made you want to get involved within something like the Athletes Commission?
I feel it's very important for the athletes to have a voice, especially the throwers, especially the female athletes. And also down here in Oceania for Oceania to have a voice. You know, it's I guess our sport is very dominated by the Europeans and the Americans, and it was important to me to be able to give that opportunity and to have that voice for them within IAAF. So that's why I kind of got involved in being part of the commission.
Going forward, outside of the Athletes Commission, do you have any plans to continue beyond Tokyo, for example?
As far as the Athletes Commission?
Well, oh no, I mean Athletes Commission included. I mean, what? Let me rephrase that question. Actually, what? I guess for 2019, because you don't really have any major championships this year, you've just got the Diamond League. What are your plans within the sport?
As far as competing?
Both Athletes Commission, competing.
Oh, so I'm not quite sure what I'm going to doing going forward as far as competing. All I know is that for now, like right now, I'm just going to keep competing and doing what I do now. You know, when you're a mum and you have baby brain, I'm a short-term goal type of person right now, because that's what I've got to do. As far as the commission is concerned, I know we have re-elections next year at the World Champs, this will give us an opportunity, or guess myself and Inaki, an opportunity to be able to work together and see what we need to do going forward. Obviously, we have just been elected into these positions, but it's awesome to be able to have a chair in council to, you know, as I said, to take the athlete's voice in there. But for me, throwers always get the, you know, the short end of the stick, so to being able to voice their opinions and their thoughts within council, because, you know, it is important to have all events and included and to be fair across the board.
You did mention briefly that you know baby brain, short-term goals, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hand on heart, do you reckon we'll see you in Tokyo?
I don't know. In what capacity?
Competing.
To be honest, I don't know. I'm gonna, you know, see this year out, and then I'll, you know, if all going well, I'll go next year, and then if all going well, then you will see me in Tokyo. But I'm a month by month, year by year type of girl right now, and I have to be, because I can't only consider myself right now. I have to consider other people around me, and when you're an athlete, you become very selfish very quickly. But I can't be too selfish anymore, because I think I've got to consult with other people now. So we shall see. I guess all I can say is for that is watch this space.
Okay. I don't know if you noticed, but I put a question out to Twitter so that some of the Twitter followers of the podcast and the IAAF could submit. So they could submit some questions to you. So we've had a few interesting ones. the first question I've got is, fans call you Queen Val. If you were queen for the day, what would you do? And P.S. Do you like corgis? And that was from Sarah Dixon.
Oh, Sarah, I don't like corgis. Sorry. What would I do for the day? I like to wear my crown jewels. You know, if you're going to be the queen, you might as well put that damn crown on and walk around like a queen around the palace. Why not, right?
Exactly. Okay. Another question. This is from David James on Twitter. This is, it's not from David James, it's from a guy called Paul. It says, if you'd ever taken up another throwing event, what would you choose?
So probably discus, although I really love watching the javelin.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, like I just think the javelin is just like such a beautiful event. But you have to be really fast, and are probably a little bit skinnier than what I am, so.
Okay, this one is from David James, and this is there any performance throughout your whole career that stands out to you?
Yes, I actually have two, and the first one was winning the World Youth Championships in 2001.
Yeah.
And the second one was Beijing, because both competition, I mean, I had other perfect competitions, but the Beijing competition was just perfect. In the moment, the first Olympic title, took me 10 years to get there. It was just absolutely amazing. And 2001 was just, I guess, the stepping stone to the rest of my career.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's lovely. Okay. Another question as well is, this is from Danny Tolhurst, and the question is, obviously we were speaking about Inaki earlier, the question is, if you and Inaki were to swap events, you doing the race walking and him doing the shot put, who would be better at which event?
That's a tough one, because I guess anybody can walk. Not being rude or anything, I mean, there might not be any technique, but, and I'll be like super, super slow, but I guess anybody can walk. I guess we need to put that to the test.
That finally is the end of our Valerie Adams trilogy. It has been slightly drawn out, but it's only because she's just so incredible.
She's a legend.
I just want to hear from her every time.
Okay, well, unfortunately, though, that is also the end of the whole episode.
What?
I know. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time to discuss loads of Diamond League action. I'm sure loads of other fantastic results around on the circuit, the GOTSIS meeting, and much more. Thank you so much for listening, guys. It really does mean a lot to us. Katie, tell them your Twitter so they can find you and stalk you.
So my Twitter is K_CroydonSmith. That's Croydon with an E. We'd love to get your thoughts and feedback about this podcast, and just make sure we're giving you everything that you want.
I thought you were going to ask about the thoughts and feedback from your username. I mean, they can do that for you. I really
want to know whether it really reflects my true personality.
And yeah, you can follow me @_BenHarlow. And yeah, as Katie said, we do really appreciate your feedback, not so much on our Twitter usernames, more so on the podcast. So.
But also just athletes you'd love to hear from.
Yeah.
We're really committed to providing you with in-depth, looking closer into these athletes' lives, these amazing people from across the world. So get in touch with us if there's someone you really want to hear from. We will try and make that happen.
So I guess that's a wrap on this week's episode. Make sure you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, and we are on Spotify now as well. They let us in, thank God. And you'll hear from us again in a few weeks' time. See you later, guys.
See ya, bye.
Bye.